This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's a little chilly. It's been raining, which, you know, beautiful rain. Thank God for the rain. Rain is good. But then the wind's blowing a little bit. It's a little rainy. And the temperature has started to drop, of course, because, you know, we're heading into the end of October. And obviously, the end of October, things are going to start cooling up. At least in the current temperature, climate, slash whatever, things do start warming up in or cooling down in October. But anyways, so that's happening with the rain, with the wind, with the temperature. It's a little chilly, which of course means that winter is coming. But, you know, that's that. So, all is well. It's been a good week at work. Been able to get some good things done, and the projects are moving forward. And, you know, that's all good. The whole sprinting thing is working out well. We did do the update last week, and I did throw the switch on it late Thursday after... We generously, as in, I wasn't that involved. I was a little bit involved, but I wasn't that involved. Certainly, a younger man named Justin carried the load on it, and he did a great job. When I left on Thursday, I think I mentioned this a little bit last week. We had... Everything seemed to be in place, seemed to be okay. We were waiting for the DNS to propagate Thursday night. I kept watching it, and you know what? It seemed to be fine, so I went ahead and threw the switch Thursday night, even though I knew I wasn't going to be there on Friday. Justin wasn't going to be there on Friday, but to wait until Monday, we're starting to get into the busy time when people are trying to submit expenses, and it all looked good and seemed like it was okay. So far, everything seems to be fine. In fact, I talked to one of the main processors today who uses the system more heavily than anyone else and asked, how's it going? And she said she hasn't had any trouble, hasn't heard any complaints from anybody. She said it all seems to be working good. So yay. So it looks like we got our major update done there. So good, now we're moving on to other things. Trying to keep everything moving forward, but that's all going well. The writing is going fine on book 12. I have been hearing back from beta readers, so that's good. They're giving me a lot of good input, and that's coming back in. And I'm up to chapter 8 on the new book, which is Windfall Wasteland. Although that's just a working title. I really would like the title to be Wasteland. But normally the titles have something to do with the proverb that it's about. And it is tangentially related to the proverb. Because the proverb is the dishonest steward. The title could be changed to be closer. It's just, I really love the title Wasteland. But I'll work on that. So that's good. Things are puttering along there. Writing is good. This was the first full week of writing that I had. And I'd been doing pretty good, hitting my marks. Last night, I just ran out of steam. These fast nights, they're a little rough. But I just ran out of steam last night. And it got to be 10:30 and... my brain. I was waiting for a message to come back from a friend that I thought I was going to have breakfast with this morning. Didn't have breakfast with him because I never heard back from him. And so I had stayed up a little later, but boy, by 10:30, I was done. I was cooked. So I had gotten within, I think, 200, 250 words of where I was supposed to be. And I should be able to get that taken care of tonight. So I think we'll be fine. At the same time, I'm working on the ugly Christmas sweater outfit for ugly Christmas sweater day. And so I'm just going to be working on that along, you know, pretty much all through November, because I'm not going to work on it much each day. I'll be working on it Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then some over the weekends, because I've got to keep writing, keep that going. But it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's going to be cute. So that's all good. I'm really looking forward to breakfast tomorrow morning. Several weeks ago, one of the psychologists that we have in the church, I think he's a psychologist and not a psychiatrist. If I'm saying that wrong, I apologize, but I won't use his name, so it shouldn't make any difference. He had was walking past me in the hall at the church, after service one day, and he said, "Phil," he said, "I gotta tell you." He said, I never thought that in such a mild-mannered person there would be such a rebel, something about... And he was referring to costume days. He even saw the pictures of costume days. And of course, just looking at the costumes from the outside, it appears to be quite a rebellious stance, that I'm going against all convention and I'm just saying, this is who I am. And, you know, it was interesting, because there definitely is a little of that kind of rebellious stance in these costume days. There's no question that there is. Because I like being unique. But I try not to be unique just because I'm trying to be contrary, or just because I'm trying to be outrageous. I try to be unique because I believe that something that I have investigated, something that I've spent time thinking about, that effort has led to some wisdom or understanding that I can then apply in a unique way. And in applying it in a unique way, I can get to an expression that may be misunderstood, and that's fine if it is. But if anyone would like to take the time to talk to me about it, I can demonstrate that there is good cause for what I am doing. That it's not just to be contrary. It's not just to be outrageous. There is good cause. And so this conversation that I had with one of our psychologists in the church was really a part of that, because just looking at it from the outside, it looked like I was only doing it to be a little bit outrageous and to buck convention and to violate the social norms just because I'm an extrovert or something. And so he had come by and he had said, you know, something to the effect, "I never imagined that under such a mild-mannered person there was such a rebel." And I laughed. I said, "Well," I said, "I have, you know, some foundational reasons why I keep moving farther and farther into this." And so we had just talked just a little bit about the whole gender relations stuff. And he seemed really interested and he seemed really receptive to it. And I said, "You know what? We should get together sometime. We should talk." I said, "I'd love to hear your opinion." And I would very, very much love to hear his opinion, because he has far more experience with people than I do. And he obviously has a much larger body of literature that he can draw from in terms of understanding human behavior than I will ever be exposed to. So it would be interesting to see if just coming at it from a systems analyst perspective, if that's useful. So we're getting together tomorrow. We had set up, had we set something up and then it didn't happen? Or we had talked about setting something up. And then I had an opening, and so I called him. And I warned him. I said, it is Crazy Paisley Day. And he said, oh, that's fine. That'll be great. I said, I'll enjoy it. So we're going to get together tomorrow and chat. And, you know, hopefully he can see some of this dynamic in motion. So hopefully, you know, all that'll work out. And we'll see. You know, it'll be fun to see what his input is and see what his reactions are. He did, when we were talking, I had mentioned that I have had instances where there have been men who have reacted with a disgust response. And I may have mentioned this on the podcast already as well. And I talked to him a little bit on that Sunday morning after service about that. And I said, you know, the problem there is there's just a question that keeps going over and over and over in their mind. And that's why they're having a disgust response. And he kind of looked at me. I said, well, the question is, can I have sex with it? And he put back his head and he laughed. I have mentioned this. I've mentioned this on the podcast. He laughed, and then he stopped, and then he laughed some more. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to discuss it with him and see what his reactions are and what he thinks about all of the ideas. So I do believe it's useful for me, specifically useful for me, and I do believe it has helped me better understand. So that's that. Last week, was it last week or the week before? No, week before last, I had talked about female orgasm, and I had said, you know, this is pretty plain, and if you're easily offended, or if, you know, you should just shut it off right now, it's not going to be that plain again, but something happened this last week that I'm sure you've already heard about, but when it happened, I was just like, what? Okay, all right. And there's just some fascinating things about all of this with me. And specifically, the reports came out that the brand Always, which part of the products that are manufactured under the brand Always are menstruation products, that the brand Always had changed its packaging because they used to have a Venus symbol of woman, where you have the circle and the plus out that comes out the bottom of it, which obviously indicates not only the planet Venus, but also indicates this wondrous, wondrous ability that women have to create autonomous, conscious, self-directed human beings, which is a startling thing. The news came out that Always brand had a Venus symbol on their packaging, but they had removed it because certain members of the LGBTQ community had petitioned them to remove it because they felt like it was discriminatory, because more than just biological women use their products. And I read this and I went, oh, okay, sure, okay. And let me just check my notes real quick to see what there is in my notes, and then I'll just kind of give you some of my thoughts on this, because it does dovetail with what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. So the title of the article was Always, the brand, to stop using Venus symbol on menstruation products to be more inclusive. Now then, I should first tell you that that headline was written, or somebody wrote that headline, at Fox News. So there's already some loaded stuff in there, because as we'll see later, when the trans people react to this news, they don't use the terminology menstruation products. They use the terminology sanitary towels. So, you know, people, it's interesting, people will pick the terminology that supports whatever they're trying to say. But the title of this article was "Always to Stop Using Venus Symbol on Menstruation Products to Be More Inclusive." So to its, you know, and so Procter & Gamble brand Always will remove the feminine Venus symbol from its menstruation products in an effort to be more inclusive to transgender customers, according to reports. The move came after LGBTQ activists reminded the company on social media that not all of their customers are women, the Independent reported. Quote, this is a quote from Procter & Gamble, quote, "For over 35 years, Always has championed girls and women, and we will continue to do so," the company said in a statement Tuesday. "We are also committed to diversity and inclusion and are on a continual journey to understand the needs of all of our customers." So customer officials added they realize not everyone who needs feminine hygiene products identifies as a female. Procter & Gamble did not immediately respond to an after-hours email from Fox News. Now, okay, the decision, now, okay, so, well, we'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so, this is back to the article. The decision was lauded by trans activists, but faced criticism online. So, this is what one woman wrote on Twitter. Quote, "Women are quite literally being erased from sanitary products now. Is there anywhere we are allowed to be visible?" One woman wrote on Twitter. Then, the Twitter account Transactual wrote back and said, "Well done to Always for making sure your packaging is inclusive. We've read the Daily Mail article about it, and we're quite frankly worried for the women whose sense of self is so fragile that the removal of a symbol from a packet of sanitary towels makes them feel erased." Okay, so that's the sum total of the article. That's it. So you've got a company, they're removing the female symbol on their line of products that are sanitary products, specifically menstruation products, that is what these products are. And you had LGBTQ community that commented about how that having this symbol on the package didn't recognize that more than just women, quote unquote, their term, more than just women used the product. So then they removed it. Then a woman complained about it, and then the woman was told, "You shouldn't be so sensitive," basically, about just a symbol being removed from a product. Okay, so that's where we are now then. So the question becomes, who were the LGBT community activists concerned about when they commented on Twitter that Always was including this symbol and Always should be more inclusive? Okay, now then. So, cis heteronormative men, let's take that as a group, who for some reason might need some sort of a product that was blood absorbing, had some sort of a physical difficulty that would require some sort of a blood-absorbing product, do you think that they would feel excluded from using that product simply because it had a female symbol on it? And I think the answer to that question is no, they would not feel excluded from using that product. Cis heteronormative men would not feel excluded simply because there was a female symbol on it. They might feel a little embarrassed about buying the product when they, you know, actually checked out, but I think they would be fine because they, if necessary, have been buying these products for a long time already. And oh, just a second, I gotta get a package out of the lower half of the mailbox, and I'm too close. I've gotta swing out just a little bit. So I don't think it's the cis, whatever we call them, heteronormative, blah, 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 blah. I don't think it's them that would necessarily be offended or feel excluded by having this symbol on there. I think about the only group that might be offended by having a female symbol on a product that is designed to assist with a uniquely biologically female, biological female, a problem that is unique to a biological female, i.e. menstruation, probably would be a transgender, a transgender female, or a man who is considering transitioning. That's the only thing that I could think of. The only person who would really be offended by seeing this symbol on there. I mean, I can't. This is. I don't know why people would be offended by having a female symbol on a menstruation product. But apparently somebody was trying to make this case, or this whole thing was a joke. And I am more than happy to say, yeah, this thing was a joke. That there was some bunch of guys who got together and started some kind of trans organization just to see how stupid they could make companies look. I mean, I would not doubt that might be happening, because there's some people that just like to just stir up as much trouble as they can. But let's say there is an organization and it commented that there were activists, LGBTQ activists, who decided that they were going to criticize Always for having a female symbol on a product that was made to assist with menstruation. Let's just say that that's true. The only possible people that I could think of who might be offended by this would be men who believe they're females and haven't transitioned yet, but they're just thinking about it and they want to buy these products to, I don't know, wear them in their underwear because they're, you know, trying to feel more female. I still don't know why this would offend them. Because if they think they're a female, why would they be offended by a female symbol? I don't get this. I just don't understand where the logic was in this in the first place. Because if the people they're trying to protect would be the men who are transitioning to be women, why would they be offended with that? Or maybe the people they're trying to protect are the women who are trying to transition to be men, but they're still menstruating and seeing that symbol, female, on there makes them feel like they're not a man. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of things here. There's a whole bunch of things here that
you just go, wow, really? Is that the narrow percentage of people? Because there's a whole lot more when it comes to transgenderism. My understanding is there's a whole lot more men who believe they're women than there are women who believe they're men, if I remember the statistics correctly. So now you're down to a subset of a subset of a subset, and a company is willing to change all of their packaging because someone might be offended that they're trying to transition to a man and yet they still need feminine hygiene products. Maybe that's what it is. See, I couldn't figure out. I was thinking it was the other way around, that it was, for some reason, the transgendered females, the males who were going to male, for some reason would be, I don't know. I think this podcast has officially gone off the rails at this point, because maybe that's what we're really worried about offending. We're really worried about the male to female, or the females to male who are trying to transition, but they're still having their periods. And so they have to buy this product that specifically is made for females. And then that makes them feel like they're not a man. Even still, in that case, if they are transitioning and they're going to have all the plumbing ripped out so they don't have, then I don't understand why they would be offended by that there, because they haven't had all the plumbing ripped out yet. And certainly the other direction, you know, for men who are going towards females, I can't figure out why they would be offended, because you would think that that symbol would make them feel more like a woman since they're buying those products. It's all very confusing. It's all very confusing. But I wanted to talk about this because part of, and I will, I won't use the latter half of what I was going to say about all of that, but I will at least mention this before I wrap this up. Part of all of this gender relationship thing, part of all of this, how do you create machinery that works without mind, that leads to the propagation of the species? Part of all that, how do you drive this forward to make babies without mind? Not babies without mind, but without the influence of mind. Well, you use chemicals. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And in the female, you drive them into anxiety. That's how you weld the mother to the child. Obviously, in the man, you get him interested in at least depositing his reproductive function through lust. So that's a, you know, pleasure and those kind of things. But when I was working on what is the continuum and what is the simplified way to look at this, years ago, I adopted a scale where on one end you would have lust and on the other end you would have fear. And it roughly corresponds to, you know, testosterone on the lust side and fear on the estrogen side, and those, because often when you give estrogen to men who are transitioning, they will comment how much more emotional they are, how much more anxiety they have, how much more, you know. So these chemicals between the two genders do seem to have generalized effects on average in general, of that they push men towards lust and they push women towards fear. In terms of a basic response that people have to those things, lust tends to blind, fear tends to escalate. So fear tends to exacerbate any anxiety that you're going through, any difficulty you're going through. Fear tends to escalate. And the perception is that it's bad and it's getting worse, and that, You know, it's easy for that stuff to escalate. Lust, on the other hand, makes it easy to completely ignore things. You know, you've got guys who get all hot and bothered about a woman, and all of a sudden, he has all of these imaginings about how this woman feels about him and how she's going to react when he does this and that and the other and that and the other. And even though he's had plenty of experience maybe with women and getting to know them, all that stuff goes out the windows because his lust will drive him to just imagine this whole fantasy scenario that has no moorings in reality whatsoever. And that demooring from reality, that's what I call blind, because it just turns you into this nearsighted, self-absorbed, that's what lust does. Just can't see anything else except your little situation. Well, I talked a couple of weeks ago about the fact, you know, that I believe that God created female orgasms in the way that he created them to be a counterbalance against that anxiety. But there's another interesting observation that you can make when you're looking at the lust-fear continuum, if you're willing to accept the proposition that lust blinds and fear escalates. If you're willing to accept that proposition, then it's very, very difficult for anyone on either side of that proposition to understand the other side of the proposition. It's very difficult. And this is one of the reasons that I apologized to my wife. I had mentioned that. Apologized to my wife several weeks ago and just said, sweetie, when you had that full hysterectomy, I understood intellectually what was going on, but I just did not understand the depth of what that meant. And I apologize for that. You know, I still don't really understand the depth, but at least I'm a little bit closer to having a model that helps me to understand I don't understand the depth, which is at least a step in the right direction. So here's what's interesting to me once you get into the whole phenomenon of transgenderism. Because if it's true that it's very difficult for either side to understand what the other one feels like, then the claim that I feel like X is harder to support. Now, honestly, when a woman says, I feel like a man, I think that that's, you know, maybe that I think a woman has a far greater chance of feeling more similar to a man than a man has feeling similar to a woman. And it's because of fear escalates and lust blinds. So if a woman can take control of her fears, which is possible to do, and then can turn around and, you know, has no problem dressing down, getting her hair cut short, you know, wearing clothes that are loose fitting, taking on that persona, she will begin to be treated like a man. And it's a whole lot easier for a woman to look like a man than it is for a man to look like a woman. Simply from the physicalities involved, I could see that she could approximate the feeling of what that was like. And in fact, some women who are transitioning to a male, who want to live as a male, have some surprises. I mean, I've heard reports of some transgendered males saying, you know, wow, no one helps me out anymore. You know, I get pulled over by the cops now because I was a black woman and now I'm a black man and I get pulled over by the cops more. Okay, well, yeah, welcome to manhood. That's understandable, I think, if someone says, I feel like a man. I can actually say, well, maybe you do, or at least a close approximation. But to go the other direction, to go the other direction, I think is something different. And it's specifically something different because lust blinds. Because lust makes you simplify situations. Lust causes you to see everything from your own perspective as if your own perspective is the only perspective. And this is why I wonder if what was actually driving this was not women who are transitioning to men but still have their periods because they haven't had the physical surgery, and therefore they might be offended by having to buy a product with a feminine symbol on it. Maybe I could see that as a driver, but from the other side, I could see the potential for men who are transitioning to be women to see that symbol as a biological symbol and to see that symbol on that package of stuff that they were buying specifically to use to feel more like a woman, to see that symbol, understand it's a biological symbol, and then to be offended. Because they would never have that biology. And in that case, if that's what started this whole thing, then I think there's some really interesting things there that can layer into this idea that lust blinds. Because to say in the first place that I am a man and I feel like I'm a woman, in my mind at least, is a statement that is rife with blindness. Because you are completely ignoring all that substructure that's underneath that gives women this truly astonishing capability to create another human being. And you are completely ignoring all of the emotional load that comes along with that. You're ignoring the fact that when a boy hits puberty, he gets a joystick, and when a girl hits puberty, she gets blood and cramps and emotional upheaval, etc., etc., etc. You're ignoring the fact that in order for that system to work, that in fact there might be anxiety baked right into the system because that's how you bond a mother to child. You heighten their senses of things that can go wrong. You heighten their feeling of needing to do this. And so you've got women who are carrying this emotional load that I believe is directly related to the fact that they are biological women. And then you have this little guy who comes tripping along, perhaps wearing his dress, and saying, "Well, I feel like a woman." And that statement to me feels like it's rife with blindness, of not really having an understanding. I think one of the only reasons that a man is able to get away with making that kind of statement is that women's anxiety is heightened, and so they're very concerned about raising their hands and saying, "No, you don't, because you don't know anything about this." You know, they're trying to establish relationships. They're trying not to be offensive. They're trying, because of the emotional load that they are carrying from the biological system that makes them women in the first place. And frankly, I don't know that this is true, but what led me into this article in the first place is if, in fact, that the offense that we were trying to do away with, that the inclusion that we were trying to create was men transitioning to be women and being offended by the fact that there is a biological female symbol on the package. That seems to indicate to me that when those types of men say, I feel like a woman, what they're really saying is, I feel like a woman in my limited definition that is prescribed from my blindness over the fact that I have testosterone in my system. So I am either not going to try to understand what feel like a woman actually means, or I'm just going to make up my definition and decide that the rest of the world should just decide on that definition. And I just see lots of blindness in that. And I should just stop talking now. Because if that's what it is, if that is what it is, then what you have is men who are redefining what it means to feel like a female and then ascribing that redefinition to themselves and are conveniently being blind to all the things that it truly means to be a woman, such as menstruation and all the emotional effects that has and the physical effects that have. And so it's not enough for you to just say, yeah, I'm not a biological woman. Now you have to change the world so that you don't feel bad about your claim that you're a woman. Sorry for the rambling. I kind of got stuck midway through this because I came up with a possibility that I didn't think of. But you know what? This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.